One down. Only a Stanley Cup final. Final. No S.
Singular.
To go. Mavs are dead. I thought that they were alive because the Latvian prince, Kristaps Porzingis, went down with an injury that no one will ever be able to say. I don't even think doctors can say that.
No. I mean, it could be made up words.
Dude, I think the doctor came in and showed Kristaps Porzingis what he had on like a printout. He was like, this is what you have.
He wasn't sure. He was like, it's a ocular phrenitis.
He's like, see that? That's what's wrong with you. That's, you can't play. So the Latvian Lions out, which you knew was going to open things up at the basket for the Mavs. Mm-hmm. In fact, it opened up everything for the Mavs. The Mavs came out. They started hot.
Points in the paint.
I think that until somewhere around the, 3 or 4 minute mark left in the first quarter, the Mavs had all their points in the paint.
Yeah. Like all
everything.
Of,
it was just, it was, oh my God.
Yeah.
Right. You've removed the 7'3" defensive guy and you've replaced him with Tillman, who I was truly unaware existed until yesterday.
I was like, he's still in the league. That's sweet.
I was like, that's nice.
Cool.
He's playing real minutes for you, Boston.
They said in the broadcast, they're like, they acquired him this season from Memphis. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't remember that at all.
Had no idea. All of a sudden, there was space. All of a sudden, there was room, and you felt like Dallas had a chip in a chair. There was some hope that they would be able to make this a series. They go down 21 points in the third quarter, where I would say every reasonable person decided, okay, good night. That'll be all. That's all I'm going to take this evening. They got red hot. And the Celtics just put him away. And it was this real moment where I was watching it going, this is just a professional team versus one guy, essentially, in Kyrie Irving, who was balling out of, he was balling out of control.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but he was balling out of control. Luka was kind of nowhere. He was putting up the stats, but they were the empty calorie stats where you went, you're being hunted every single time down the floor. You're giving up way more than you're giving. And then you really, and I've felt this throughout the series, the discrepancy between Dallas's role players and Boston's quote unquote role players, because they're not actually role players, right? It's like these guys, Derek White's not a role player.
They're starters on every other team, like major guys.
Yeah, Drew Holiday, you're watching him. You know what? All I can think of when I watch Drew Holiday is if you've played basketball before, what a nightmare it is when you show up to the gym and you're a ball handler.
Yeah.
And you just get someone who covers you.
He's on your hip the whole
time. Actually great at it.
Yeah.
And you're exhausted. And you go, this sucks. You have ruined my time today. And this is normally an activity that I love to do.
Yeah.
I wanted to just get out here and get a run.
Get some
and
shots
now
up.
I've got you in my hip pocket the entire time. Moving your feet perfectly well, embarrassing me with blocks, stripping the ball, forcing me to get it out early. Awful. The fact Kyrie could score that many points with Drew Holiday is actually a triumph. Those Kyrie points should be worth a point and a half more every single time because of the way Drew Holiday plays. Watching Drew Holiday and thinking that the Milwaukee Bucks traded him to acquire Damian Lillard, it's a crazy, crazy, crazy what if, because you go back in time and you delete that and maybe Boston doesn't have a championship and maybe Milwaukee has one. I understand why they did it because Giannis wanted it, even though he said he had no idea.
Yeah, of course not.
But man, oh man, that's an all-time sports backfire.
They just gave an unbelievable player to a conference rival.
Unbelievable backfire. And for Portland, I think they got Malcolm Brogdon and
sure.
Robert Williams. It was like Robert Thomas. It's not it.
No.
for Drew.
Crazy.
Anyways, they come back. They come back on the back of stops. All of a sudden, Dallas starts making stops, and you're going, "There's no way." It's down to 16. You're like, "Okay, that was cute." Then all of a sudden, it's down to 11. Now all of a sudden, it's 6. You're going, "There's no way." They got stuck on 3. There were a couple possessions where they really had an opportunity. And then, of course, there was the PJ Washington wide open look. But Luka killed them. And And there is just no other way to put it today. I think that we are now looking at some of the worst takes that we've ever had in terms of my recent memory. And why I say we need to stop framing things as everything is the best and everything is the worst is because of stuff like this. Like the idea that we got ahead of our skis comparing Luka Doncic to Nikola Jokic. You think Jokic is getting swept in the series? You think Jokic is melting down the way that that happened? You think that he's getting hunted the way that Luka got hunted? I think that Luka Doncic, over the course of three games of getting hunted by the Boston Celtics, started to wear down. And this stuff with the officials, he makes LeBron James look like Tim Duncan, the way that he interacts with the officials. It is nonstop. He takes that foul and he screams over the bench, you better bleep and challenge that right away. Does anybody want to see Luka Doncic foul out in the NBA Finals? No. Which one of those calls did you really think that the refs just like couldn't have made? Like go through those calls and show me the one that couldn't happen. He's awful defensively. There were a couple moments like throughout the playoffs where he was making some pretty good plays against the Timberwolves where people started to do the whole like, you know, he's better at defense than you think. Not in this series. Not in this series. He's getting picked on. He's getting bullied. He's getting murdered. This is bad for Luka Doncic. And then to compile that with the way that he has just been unhinged with the officials, nonstop with the officials, this has to be a wake-up call for Luka Doncic. I didn't expect it. I think some people are going to be overly critical of him in the postgame when it comes to him saying the thing about the officials, because there's like that audio that's going to go viral.
Yeah,
about
that soundbite that was going on.
Yeah, where he said six fouls in the NBA Finals. Come on, man. I don't expect him to have it now. But when he goes into this offseason, there's got to be a realization that for him to be an NBA champion, he's got to park some of that just me. I don't care about anything that's going on in the world around me, complaining with the officials, just berating the officials, staying out of the play too late, taking that awful offensive foul. Like, man, there was just some bad ones. He melted down in front of our eyes. His team was in it. They got the stops. They were right there and all they needed. This is the Mavs formula. Get it close at the end of a game and then you got the two best closers. You got Kyrie and Luka. I don't care if it's Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown on the other side of the ball. That you got the best two closers for scoring in basketball. So go out and close it. Go out and be the best backcourt. And he fouls out. So to me, this has to be a wake-up call for Luka Doncic. And if it's not now, then I don't think it's ever going to happen. Anyway, a guy who, you know, a big fan of. Love this guy. Love this guy's career. 15-year NBA veteran, 10 seasons with Dallas. And now an all-star and TV analyst with Bally Sports Southwest. It's Devin Harris. What's up, man? How are we doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great, other than I love the NBA Finals, and I'm incredibly disappointed that it's over. You know, like, it's done. I had this moment when the Dallas came back from that, when they came back from down 21, where I went, oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Like, I just wasn't ready for this to be a clean sweep and for us to go into the summer of takes. But, you know, I want to start with Luka Doncic, because I think that this game was very, very, very much about him. Do you think that last night is going to serve a long-term purpose for Dallas? Do you think that this will be something that helps change the way Luka fixates on the officiating in a basketball game and maybe even tries to improve his defense?
I think so. I mean, if we really look at it from a team standpoint, like the core players, and I mean the teams, the guys on the team right now, first time experience for them. You're making it this far. And it's a learning experience. Well, you know, you learn from your failures. We talked about, I mean, I think we were talking about the Celtics very similarly when they lost to Golden State a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, we were critical of Jaylen Brown, critical of Jason Tatum. They took that failure and they got back to the mountaintop and they're ready to make those adjustments. And I feel like with Dallas and the things that they're failing with right now with this core group, they're going to take a look at that, take a look at things they can do better, Luka included. And I don't think they'll make the same mistakes if and when they choose to get back to the finals. So it's all a learning process. I think sometimes you have to go through failures to be able to come back and do it better. And I think he'll take a look at it. And this kid is very smart. Does he still need to mature a little bit? Absolutely. But he's continuing to get better. So he's going to look to take at these moments and figure out how to do it differently if and when, you know, he does get back to this moment. But that's the thing. Like, nothing is promised.
When you're playing with a guy, though, and they're just, like, locked into the officials that way, how distracting can it be for the rest of the team?
Well, let's be honest. I mean, it's not like it's the first time. It's not something that they haven't really kind of dealt with.
Yeah, actually, they've been training.
Right. Yeah, so it's like it's not like this. This is just out of the blue. It's something that he's been dealing with over the years. I thought at the start of the season, he really came in with a more of a focus on that. Now he's reverted back a little bit to it, and you know you hate to see it at this point in the season, but you know it's not the only reason that you know they're losing. The Celtics are a really good team.
Sure,
and the way they move the ball. You know, the positions that they put you in, it's going to be a tough go every single night. But this team, they've kept it close. You know, the last couple of games have been close. They just haven't been able to get the stops when they need to. And, yeah, defensively, they're put in a tough spot.
Yeah. Him in particular. And that's the point of curiosity for me is you mentioned the maturity factor, and I go, okay, that I have to believe can change, right? He's a fiery guy, and it's tough because with dudes like that, you want to balance the, hey, we need that emotion, we need that ferocity, but what we don't need is when it starts to go into the unhinged territory. And, like, he's not the first player to do that, right? If anything, the most recent comparison I would guess for me would be Westbrook was a little like that, where you'd go, man, you need that fire. You need that tenacity. But then once it starts to spill over into – you're pulling up from three on an odd man break, then maybe like try to find one small way to take it back one notch, try to play a little bit more controlled. But I do think that part of it did stem from the fact that he was being attacked over and over and over again. I think that it takes from his offense because he starts to lose his legs, but you also start to see the frustrations build. And then there's some just awful decisions that he'll make where he goes, he gives up on a lot of these defensive plays. He starts to try to do the little poke move, the step aside thing. Where do you see him being able to improve defensively? Because like that'll be the big offseason question for me outside of the maturity is can he get a lot better there?
He can be better. I think a lot of guys can be better, but the way the defense is structured and playing with a guy like Dirk, it was very similar with that, with guys would continuously attack him. Like, we don't need Dirk to be great. We need Dirk to just be solid. And then the other four guys have to figure out, you know, how can we cover for some of the weaknesses that he has and some of the great teams that we played on. You know, we figure that out. We understand that they're going to attack him. I think with what we're seeing out there, it just can't be blow-bys. Mm-hmm. It's okay to get beat. It's, you know, if you're sending them into the help and then the defense can respond to that. But like the blow-bys are what really kind of put this defense in a bad spot because, you know, if you get there too quickly, you know, skip pass and not a lot pass, then you got to swing and then they're banging threes on the weak side, like left and right. And that's to the point where like, okay, we understand that they're going to continue to attack you and they can mix it up, throw some zone out there and do some different things. But, you know, from a defensive structure standpoint, but I don't think necessarily the effort's there, but you just can't continuously allow guys to get in your paint at such a quick pace, especially when they shoot the ball so well on the weak side. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Celtics because they really have been incredible. It's 10 straight playoff wins. I like, you're a guy who made the finals in 06. Can you speak to just how incredibly difficult that is, regardless of, you know, the strength of opponent that the Celtics have faced this year, 10 straight in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's up there with some of the better teams. We saw Golden State. I mean, the Lakers, you know, when Kobe and Shaq. And playoff time, like, intensity is at an all-time high. Whether, you know, some of the opponents, you know, other guys are injured or not, you're getting everybody's best effort from jump ball. And to be able to have that type of consistency, and you're not going to play your best. You know, we saw in game 2, they didn't shoot the ball particularly well from 3, but they still find ways to be able to get wins. And it speaks a lot to just the team that they have. I mean, when you got your top 7 guys that all can shoot threes in a 5-out type scenario, and you guard at a high level, I mean, it speaks to the deepness of their team. And you got to give, you know, the way the team's constructed, you got to give Brad Stevens a lot of credit.
Yeah, you do. I will say this, though. It's definitely a two things can be true thing to me where I go, I think that this Boston team really might be great. Like, they might be one of the better finals teams that we've seen, since maybe even those Warriors teams. Like, do I think that maybe they were better than last year's Denver team? Maybe. Do I think that they were better than the Milwaukee team that won? Like, yeah, maybe. It's just they never really did get the proper challenge. The like it is 10 straight wins where you go, okay, that's an incredible accomplishment for you. But it also is a bit of a reminder that we just didn't get to see them against that opponent that really matched up well against
right.
them and really pushed them to the brink. And so there's like a weird part of me where I appreciate what they've done, but I almost feel like not sorry for them. That's stupid because they're going to be NBA champions. But, you know, I almost feel like they're not going to get their proper due because of that, and that they themselves may even have that question internally at some point. What would it have been like if we were pushed just a little bit by another team?
Absolutely. And I kind of put them in a similar situation as Milwaukee when they won it. You know, they've had key injuries in each round that they went through that kind of held it up. But part of this, at the end of the day, is, you know, the healthiest team. And, you know, part of it is how well you play. Part of it's a little bit of luck. And you can't blame a team. They didn't cause the injuries. They went out and did what they're supposed to do and win these games. And, yeah, we could say, well, you know, if this would have happened, if, you know, what the series would look like against Miami or what the series would have looked like. And but that's not their fault. And I mean, I don't think they're gonna look back and say, well, they're gonna be proud of what they accomplished. And you know, like I said, Tatum and Brown have got a lot of criticism over the last 4 or 5 years. Can they play together? Can this work? And they've, you know, they're gonna look at it like, yeah, we proved a lot of people wrong.
Yeah. Again, this series, so much of it has felt like to me, well, a couple things that just remain consistent. One is just the way that these two teams get offense differently, where with Boston, even during that stretch, right, if you look at when they put up 21 or when they went up 21, it's ball movement and three-point shooting and feeling like, holy crap, everybody is involved in this, versus Dallas, where it's, well, you need dribble penetration to try to create for others. And it's just, it was a lot of ISO ball. When you look at Boston as a collective, is the legacy of this team just going to be that, though, where it's like, hey, you've got four guys, and when they've got Kristaps healthy, five guys that on any given night can be your best player?
Yeah, and you see, we saw it in game one with Kristaps. We saw it in game two with Drew.
Yeah.
When your two guys are struggling, you have other guys that are willing and able and to step up in a big way. And if you look at all the great Boston teams, I think it speaks to the foundation, what they're built on, is a team aspect. Yeah. And I think we're seeing just that with this team. When Porzingis is healthy, they got a strong five that, you know, can play well on any given night. And they're willing to sacrifice. You know, you heard Drew talk about, hey, I'm just a utility guy. Mm-hmm. But he could be somebody else's, you know, second, third best player. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's the ability to sacrifice for something that's greater. And you're seeing that with Tatum, you know, high assist game, not really worrying about the score and if his shot's off. Their ball movement and the way they lock in defensively, I mean, it's the reason why they, you know, kind of blew through the regular season this year.
So I think Jaylen Brown is going to win the, you know, playoff MVP. He's going to end up winning this. But I really, just watching the games and the feeling I have during them is that there's a really strong case for Drew as well. And I just want to ask you as a guard, and especially as a scoring guard, like a guy who would have been defended by someone of Drew Holiday's calibers, like what you think when you're watching him play defense right now, and if there's a player that comes to mind that you would think of as a comparable to him.
Drew has great feet and great hands.
And he's built like a football player.
Yes, he is. And understands angles. I don't know if I've played or seen a guy kind of like him.
Yeah.
He's very unique in that way. And on top of that, he can still give you buckets.
Yep.
On top of that as well. Pretty good shooter.
A great pass, strong body. That pass underneath the basket for the, like, basically clinching three to White.
And, you know, obviously me being Milwaukee, I'm a little biased. I mean, he was a big part of their championship.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have to make that trade to go and get Dame, but that's like, they got to be kicking themselves right now. As soon as he goes to Boston, it's like they're setting themselves up beautifully, right? Like, and that's out of their control. But, I mean, I think that was a big acquisition of the summer, him making it there and kind of setting them up for – and. Not only him and White together in the backcourt, you're talking about two, you know, all defensive caliber players. to go along with your superstars. I mean, it speaks to why they're doing so well.
Yeah. I just think where Drew is at right now defensively, you kind of said it with, it's hard to make a comparison, it's like a level of elite defensive point guard that you really don't see very often. And like, I would say Marcus Smart has a bit of that where he's just like, he's big, right?
Yeah.
And he can move his feet and he plays well. But I think Drew is actually playing guards better than I've seen Marcus Smart do. Like, Marcus Smart, I think, has a bit of an advantage playing bigger guys, but even then I'm watching Drew and going, I don't feel like anybody has a mismatch on you, which is insane. And then, like, I kind of got to go back to when I was a kid and the feeling of watching, like, Gary Payton guard someone where he's, like, 6'5", and he has the massive hands, but he was also really strong, like, through the core and, like, built, too, right? Not as muscular as Drew, but... Man, oh man, I just, every time Kyrie's bringing the ball down the floor against Drew, I'm going, what a nightmare. What a horrible, horrible time Kyrie is having right now. And I think if they win that game, like if Dallas finds a way to win that game, I'm starting this show with, that's one of the most impressive performances I've seen from a guard in Kyrie, just because of the strength of opponent that he had to do that against.
I agree. I mean, that matchup was one of the ones that I was looking forward to watching. We know how talented Kyrie is offensively and his creativity and his ability to shot make. Obviously didn't play, you know, extremely well in Boston, but I knew he would come out guns blazing in game three. But yeah, it's when you have great defensive players on top of that, but also when you have the entire team that's buying in to what you're doing. It just makes it so much more elite. And yeah, Drew's going to make it tough on you. Just cutting off angles. You know, rarely are you just going to, you know, blow by and he's going to pick you up 94 feet. Strong base. He just makes it tough. And you're going to make some tough shots. And he's not going to let that bother him. But he just puts you in a completely tough position to be able to shoot a good percentage over, 46, 48 minute game.
Do you think last night was important at all for Kyrie's legacy? Because we went to this place where we were talking about, you know, best guard tandems, and he did not play well in those first two games. There was all of this stuff about Boston and maybe it being in his head. And I thought that yesterday, you know, to me, he's kind of bulletproof amongst the NBA community because he's such like a pure hooper and the people respect the skill so much. But do you think that it was important for him to at least have a night where he was brilliant offensively against the Celtics and not finish that series, you know, swept with a lot of performances where like the shooting percentage is awful and he's, you know, really struggling from deep and not getting into his bag?
Yeah, I think it was important. And here's the thing. They're just slowly starting to figure out what these two guys need around them in order to continue to be successful. When he first got here, that past season didn't particularly go well. I don't think the surrounding guys were a great fit for Luka and Kai. Come back the following season, they make a few trades, make a few adjustments, big trades at the deadline. And they're just going to continue to monitor and figure out what these two guys need. But I think the tandem, and they've answered everybody's question, can Luka and Kai work? The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Now, it's about continue to build from a team standpoint so they can make the team a little bit stronger and figure out what that looks like. But with Kai, especially where he is in his career right now, I think he's at his best when his mind is clear and he is locked in. And I think since he's been to Dallas, he's really been enjoying being here. Mm-hmm. And you can tell just how he plays, you know, smile on his face and his ability to lift up his teammates. I think from a leadership standpoint, this is one of the better seasons that I've seen from him, you know, talking to young guys, taking young guys underneath his wing and looking at his finals. Yes, he struggled. That's a hostile environment, right? Mm-hmm. Got a lot of built up feelings. And I think he'll be the first one to say like, yeah, probably got to him a little bit, but I knew he was going to have a really big game three. I imagine game four is going to be just the same. And this team, although you say it's over, I will be thoroughly shocked if it's come down to a sweep. Just when you're down 3-0, game four is all about pride, right? And I think we're going to see a major effort from this team come into game four to at least try to force it back to Boston.
Yeah, I can see that. But that's like the, what was it, 2017 Warriors?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, game three was your shot. You were right there.
Right.
You had it.
I had the game two. Game two was their shot.
You thought game two was their shot? Because game...
Yeah,
game
I mean, the fact...
Sorry, go ahead.
The fact that, like, that to me was the game they should have had.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact... Boston, the way they shot the basketball.
Oh, that one. This series. Okay, yeah.
Yes, this series. Game two was the one that the Mavs could have got. Like, right? Like, that was the one. That was the missed opportunity.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Boston doesn't shoot very well. They lose Porzingis in the game. You didn't get a ton from Tatum. It was there for the taking. And, man, that's what I think is most frustrating if I am a Dallas fan, is I'm like, and that's why I probably am pissed at Luka and Kyrie in this thing, is that, yeah, Kyrie, if he's better in game two, then maybe they get that win. And then Luka, again, through the course of the season, you can talk about the defense, the fouling, the everything, but it's like, yeah, when you're right there in those close games, I expect the Mavericks to be more competitive than that. And, like, you know, the shot that Kyrie had to take at the very end of that game, right? That's the position you don't want to be in. You're supposed to feel so good, and then it's a fall away three to try and put you down one with 30 seconds, and you're like, yeah, now you're dead, now you're cooked, you need both guys. Anyway, Devin, thanks so much for the time today, man. Enjoy what is left of this series.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys, for sure.
Yeah, take care, man. There he goes, Devin Harris, 15 years in the NBA, made a finals in 2006, went to an all-star game, and now an analyst with Bally Sports Southwest. So, yeah, these are my main takeaways at this point, because I don't know how much NBA finals talk I'll end up doing next week now, given that the game's going to be on Friday, and I think it could very well be a sweep. And these will very likely remain consistent unless... things change. Yes, tons of credit to the Celtics. Again, 10 straight wins for them. But I wonder how great they are. And I very much hope that they keep this group together, that Kristaps can get healthy and play well, and that they end up next season with a couple of opponents that really do feel like a challenge. Because one of the most disappointing things about Dallas, and one of the reasons why... Again, I was rooting for Denver in the Minnesota series, is that I want the NBA finals always to be a representation of the two best teams at the very end. It's one of the special things about the sport. You go year over year, and generally that is what you get. Not every year, not in the fake COVID championship that the Lakers won, obviously, like you got Jimmy Butler and the G League team, but most years you get a very legitimate title because you have to beat the best team. It's a great representation of who's at the top. What I do fear a little bit in this parity era with basketball, with this new luxury tax rules and the difficulty of keeping some of these teams together, is that you end up with more finals like this one. This feels very, and now this year's Stanley Cup final is great. Really, really, really great. Actually, if you look at, I think, preseason odds, you might have ended up with the two best teams. Like, I'm at least two of the top five.
Yeah, two of the bigger favorites for sure.
And it feels right in the Stanley Cup final right now. It feels very NBA. You got the two best teams in hockey facing each other. Awesome. Best player in the game, I guess, against best team in the game. That's NBA final-esque. This series has, frankly, sucked because Boston is so clearly better than these guys. Like, again, I want to go back to that run when they went up 21. It's just... pick your poison pick your poison.
Yeah.
They're playing five out. They don't even have Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah.
Don't forget this. Porzingis should have been an all-star this year. Like, with all due respect to Scottie Barnes, he got into the all-star game because they didn't want to overload it with Boston Celtics. From a who deserved it standpoint at that time, Kristaps Porzingis for sure was deserving of being on the NBA all-star team. Didn't end up making it. They're missing a 7'3" unicorn who won them game one and who protects the paint far better than any player that they have in this series. Dallas, like I said, all of a sudden you noticed Derek Lively and PJ Washington starting to score. All of a sudden Dallas has corner three opportunities that we hadn't seen in the series. They get all those points in the paint early on in the series. And still, Boston can strangle you where they play these five awesome guys. And yes, I'm including Al Horford in that because... Al Horford can still knock down a shot and plays just incredibly smart.
Mm-hmm.
He just knows when to make the pass. He doesn't make stupid plays, doesn't take bad shots, plays so well within their offense, sets good screens.
Does like team defender too.
Just a very good player all around. In fact, if the one thing, well, there'll be two. The two things I'll be happiest for with the Celtics series win, one will be Jrue Holiday and just you know, you take the blame essentially for Milwaukee, yeah, and Giannis wants you out of town and you leave and then you end up in Boston and people are watching you and going, oh my God, you're so obviously more valuable to winning now than where Damian Lillard's at in his career. As a two-way player, like, unquestionably, you went into the lab this offseason, you went, yeah, I am going to become an all-time defensive great. I adore Jrue Holiday. Like, I, out of all the players in the league, yesterday was two of my favorite aesthetic players to watch in all of basketball with Kyrie versus Jrue. That was basketball porn. It was awesome watching those two guys go head-to-head. Awesome. The hand-checking and, like, Kyrie never getting frustrated with it, too. And that's Luka. I don't know how you could ever look at Kyrie and the defense that he was getting and the hands and the physicality that Kyrie was dealing with and just played through it. And Luka is like over and over again trying to hunt fouls and then flailing and falling down and falling out of the play. And then Boston's going the other way and scoring. He's just quitting on plays. I'll get back to Luka in a second. But that Boston team, that's the ultimate formula I think you want in the NBA now, where you do have two guys that are stars. I don't think teams will be able to replicate this, by the way, because it's just, you're not going to get a collection of five guys with this talent.
Yeah.
I think for a while where, and I'm including Kristaps in that now, not Al Horford. I don't think you're going to get five guys that are this good when they're healthy all together on the same team. Even like what OKC probably has the best shot right now because of the drafting they've had and the assets they have. So maybe OKC could do it if Chet really hits and Williams doesn't turn out to be who he was in the playoffs, but closer to who he was in the regular season. They can find the right Giddy trade. They continue to draft and develop well. That Kayson Wallace guy maybe ends up being a very, very good player. But I'm talking, these five guys are all NBA all-star caliber players. Like true all-star caliber players who defend unbelievably well, who can all shoot the three, who can all get to the basket, who can like all create for themselves, but who all have incredible basketball IQ and are playing unselfish basketball. It is a treat to watch the Boston Celtics play. They are awesome.
Yeah.
They are so good. And just, they didn't get the challenge we needed.
Yeah.
And so they'll kind of always, people will try to diminish it. People will try to say, well, how good were they? I think they were very, very good. And it's, like I said, two things can be true. You were unbelievably good. You were probably the best team this year. I think that they would have beaten Denver, especially healthy with Porzingis. And I know that's a tough thing to do, you know, you go the timeline argument. But I think that they were the best team, but we can still feel a little underwhelmed by the championship just because of the lack of challenge.
Yeah, there's like a little meat on the bone, right? Of just like you wanted that,
of course,
full strength, whatever.
Nobody really brought this up for the Nuggets last year, though. They played Jimmy Butler in the Heat in the finals. Did
that Heat team was way better. Jimmy Butler has won like in the playoffs, has been consistently good in the playoffs, has been there. And that Dallas team at the end for sure, but they also like crunched the Lakers. They crunched LeBron on their way to the championship. Like they crushed everybody. Their title run was far more impressive than what Boston's was. That's the issue, is like Boston played an Indiana team that frankly is a middling five seed that was only there because of injuries. They never had to play the Knicks, and the Knicks were very good against Boston the regular season, and the Knicks completely broke down and never got their opportunity to show if that would translate. And they went out and got two. Don't forget, that OG trade was made with Boston in mind. That was very much made with, we're going to throw OG at Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, whoever's going, and try to lock them up. I don't even know if they had OG in any of the Celtics games. And they didn't have to face the Sixers team with Joel Embiid, who, you know, arguably still the best player in the conference.
Didn't have to face a good Bucks team.
Yeah, exactly. So they went through it with nobody. So no, the Denver championship resembles nothing like this. I think that we're always going to remember this title as Boston was great. Boy, were those six guys, because I'll throw Horford in there, awesome for them. But man, oh man, they didn't really get a challenger.
And all those guys are signed next year too.
Yeah, yeah, I was looking at the cap sheet.
Four out of five are signed for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it was funny too, because you were saying like, I don't know how replicable. Yeah, thanks.
You got it.
It is. And it's like, think about some of these trades, like the Porzingis trade and the Holiday trade, and to some extent, like the Derek White trade.
They got assets back for Kristaps.
They got guys that teams are willing to just like give away seemingly or like throw in like yeah. Again, I know we talked about this like a couple minutes ago, but the Drew Holiday, like that was like an added thing where they rerouted Drew Holiday to the Celtics. They were like, wait, Drew Holiday is available. We'll take him now, please.
Thanks. I was actually thinking about what I need to look up what San Antonio got for Derek White.
I'll look it up right now here.
Because I was thinking about like if you tried to pick 10 guards in the NBA to go play with Wemby right now, he might be one of them. Because you wouldn't want like Damian Lillard going to play with Wemby right now. That's not what he needs at all. You wouldn't want like Trae Young to go play with him. But if you could get...
You want to hear the trade?
Yeah, they must have got... I think they got it first.
Yeah, so it's the Celtics swung a trade that sent Romeo Langford, yeah, Josh Richardson, yeah, a 2022 first, and a 2028 first-round pick swap.
Yeah. I have a hard time thinking that at the time, they didn't have Wemby, so the 2028 pick swap, maybe, you know. But either way, yeah.
Even their other former guard, Dejounte Murray... They could use.
Yeah, but I think they could get him back if they wanted.
Mm.
Like, he's available in a trade right now. If they really want him, I don't think it's going to take that much to get him. And it's DeJounte Murray.
Might have been a clash with Pop there.
I don't know if yeah, necessarily some of the sound bites, it is. Yeah. Like, this, I think it more had to do with just where they were at in their development and how much money he was going to command, right? Like, the Spurs did the right thing, which is they didn't do the Raptors thing. They went, we're not good. We need to trade our good players or our remaining guys. And they stripped it down and they got a superstar because nobody's going to sign in San Antonio. In fact, San Antonio, who no one was going to sign with, has infinitely better chances of signing guys than the Raptors do. And yet the Raptors were like, no, we're going to keep kicking the middle of the road can. And we like that. We're going to keep doing that. And now finally you're starting to get the sound bites from like Darko Rakovic talking about how, yeah, you know, it might be 2 or 3 years. We go, yeah, we know.
Yeah, we watched.
We're aware.
We watched the whole thing.
Nobody's getting confused.
There's a quick thing, by the way, that I thought was really interesting that Devin Harris said there about mm-hmm. the Luka defense thing, which was like he was saying like when he was on those Dirk teams and, you know, obviously Dirk was a liability and like the goal of the team was to like limit that and work with it. It's got to be so frustrating for these Mavs to just see like complete blowbys and like pair that. No. Remember the report that came out earlier in the playoffs? I think it was Howard Beck about like anonymous Mavs are saying that like playing on offense is frustrating with Luka. Imagine playing on defense with Luka. No, in there and you're just seeing blow by, complain. This is all back.
I hope someone does a supercut of all of the Luka falling on his ass on the offensive end, like doing a step back three and falling down, going to the basket and just running into the stanchion and falling down. Just the amount of times. This is truly how I feel. I'm not trying to be hot take guy. I think Luka quit in that game. Like, he quit. He didn't. I don't think he thought it. I don't think he thought, like, I give up. We're out of this game. I'm quitting. His body language was a quitter. I tweeted it last night. He wanted out of that game. Who does that stuff? You're playing with 5 fouls and you jump up and that's when you try to make a play on Jaylen Brown at the 3-point line as he's put his head down and he's trying to dribble into you and search for contact. And then you scream over the bench. Like, you better challenge that. Like, he's looking at the officials and he's blaming the officials. This guy was playing completely unhinged last night. And it was because he can't play defense. And I don't know how much of it is like he can't even do it versus he wouldn't commit to it. He would not commit to playing solid defense. He wouldn't commit to trying. And I'll say this too. Everyone thinks that Jokic is that. Everyone thinks like Jokic is this horrible liability. If you actually watch Jokic, he's a fine defensive player. He's not going to go out to the perimeter and like lock guys up. He's not Rudy Gobert at the basket affecting shots, but he's in control of his body and he's doing the stuff that Devin Harris is talking about where he's like, yeah, he's a competent health defender. He's not killing you play after play.
Well, it's the same thing they said about Steph for a long time. Dude, and like, he 100%. Just like, at least you tried and were doing what you were supposed to do on defense.
100%. And this is the thing with Luka is how many times was he just trying to reach? How many times did he bail on defense? How many times did he bail from the play entirely with those flops that he was having on the offensive end? How many times is he screaming in an official's face as Boston's whipping the basketball around and ready to knock down another open three? He killed them last night. And this is the difference is like, you are the best player in the series. That normally gets you an NBA title. We saw this before, okay? If you want to talk about deep and good basketball teams that we've seen that kind of resembled what Boston has, that Suns team that Giannis came back and beat, they had Chris Paul. They had Bridges. They were good. They had Devin Booker. And I don't like Ayton, but there was a run in there.
He was good for a
stretch. Where Ayton was playing extremely well.
Oh, yeah.
They were a deep team with a bunch of good players. And Giannis definitely had a better team at that point in time. But what happened? Giannis took over the series. They were down 0-2, and he said, hell no. And he strapped his team to his back, and he went after it. And Luka, conversely, down 0-2, goes and does what? Goes and has an empty calorie game where he chucks up a ton of shots. He complains at the officials all game long. And Devin says, like, they're used to it. So, like, that's how bad Luka's complaining is. That the only defense of it is, well, he does do it all the time.
Something new.
You're like, wow, man. Again, he makes LeBron look like Tim Duncan. He complains nonstop. Yeah. I can't remember a guy like him.
It's brutal.
I cannot remember a player that was red in the face over and over and over again the way that Luka Doncic is, just berating officials. It's astonishing.
Yeah.
So for a player of his caliber, I say this, and I've done this with the Leafs before, I grade on a different scale. If you are an all-world talent that has everything, I'm going to be more critical of you when you fail. It's the same reason why I can't stand the Maple Leafs, is I view them as the smart kid who does poorly in school, not as the kid who's getting the most out of what they actually have. That's why, like, again, there's some of these Celtics, you're just like, damn, man, you're really getting every drop of what you have, you're getting. Luka just leaving so much on the table, hurting his team, killing his team. Dallas should be in this series. If Luka plays within himself, if he finds a way to relax a little bit, to play with some measure of peace, Dallas wins that game. He doesn't foul out. They're down 3 points. Three. Who do you want to have? Luka Doncic and Kyrie, or Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? As good as those two guys have played, I'll take those two guys the way Kyrie was playing last night. God, just infuriating. Infuriating stuff from Luka Doncic. So maybe he figures this out, but like I said, if he doesn't figure it out now, he's never going to figure this out. If he doesn't go into this offseason and say, I got to turn some of this baby fat into muscle. I got to go to essentially Drew Holiday defensive camp and decide how to be a better help defender and actually commit to that, not just go home and drink beers and relax and then blame the officials and be surrounded by yes men. I don't think he'll ever be NBA champion. I really don't. And Devin's talking about how they're kind of like the Mavericks, or sorry, the Celtics in this regard. It's like, no, because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown were both young together. And then they built a better core, a better nucleus around them. They had other assets to trade, other pieces to trade. This Dallas team is already essentially all in. Yeah, like, is Derek Lively going to get that much better? No, he's awesome, but he's essentially a finished product.
They've used so many trade assets to get that stretch four, like, dude, over and over.
They're re-signing everybody, and Kyrie's 32.
Yeah.
Kyrie's a small guard. We know how they age. It's tough. I don't think Kyrie is 3 years from now going to be back in the finals. Their window is essentially now, and the only way for them to get back there is for Luka to take a major step on defense and with his attitude. And I'm very, very suspect that either is going to happen when you had this NBA Finals in front of you. Like, boy. And Luka also, how old is he? 25 or 26?
I want to say 25.
Yeah, I think he's 25. Is he 25?
Yeah, 25, yeah.
Yeah.
Never seen a player so smart play so dumb in a big game.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is because of the fatigue you touched on, the conditioning. When you get so tired,
you
start playing stupid. Like, you're not, those fouls you mentioned earlier, he's like hip-checking Peyton Pritchard all the way up the court. He didn't even give the refs a chance not to call
him. No, he actually had one too that he got away with on a loose ball. right? Like if he wants to cry about the officials.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was a loose ball that he and Jaylen Brown went
like
for.
It was like
and
a collision.
And he didn't go. He was not going for the ball.
No.
And he just went for the player, and he hit him like it was an open ice hit.
Yeah, caught him with his head
in
down.
In the NHL, that would have been interference, and in the NBA, for whatever reason, the refs, I thought, actually did swallow it, and they knew the situation. They were like, nah. Like, go through Lucas Fowles.
And they reversed the challenge right before his last foul.
No, I know, dude. Like, no, there's no excuse.
And then to yell at your bench to challenge again.
There's no excuse for the way Luka Doncic played in that basketball game. There is none. And again, this is now, yeah, this is a, if this is the only time he gets there, which again, you can't rule out the possibility. This is an all-time legacy changer. This is, I'm sorry, but it will. It might put you into that. I don't think it'll put him into the Russell Westbrook category. That's where I was going with it. But it's going to drop him a tier in terms of where he should be amongst the all-time greats, considering his like scoring package and the way that he does it. Anyways, let's take a quick break and do what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So we'll do a pod today, do a little podcast only time. So subscribe to this podcast. Please leave 5 stars. Share it. Do all those nice things. Before we do what we missed, I just got to say, yesterday was a Blue Jays game that probably a lot of people missed because it was during the day. I'm not a huge blame the manager guy. My position has been pretty clear all along, which is I don't know how much John Schneider helps, but I've also seen people who know a lot more than I do that this team, he is very much a will follow the game plan from the up top guys. Like he is very much a modern manager who's not out there making decisions on his own. But maybe that's a good thing because yesterday was brain dead day for John Schneider. Like maybe he's not supposed to be making decisions for a reason because they try to do this pickoff play at home, which like this, you're facing a team that can't buy a run in a big spot and you hand them the game tying run with an idiotic pickoff play that, yeah, this was his reasoning when I heard it on in the clip. He said, we're trying to make something happen. What? What? You're trying to make something happen.
We sure we were winning at the time, but we were just trying to make something happen.
Anyway, so that was dumb. And he doesn't get a challenge in time, which I don't think I've ever seen. I genuinely, I'm not sure since the challenge system got put in place where I've seen a manager not get it in time and then goes to the umpire and tries to argue with it. And you go, yeah, it's not working. And then he goes to Tim Mesa in a huge spot when, anyway, it's just, it was not a good Schneider day, man. It really wasn't. And I'll tell you this, too. This is as good of a plug as I can give to another. Blair and Barker are must-watch, must-listen right now. After a Jays loss,
heater.
You go to Barker and Blair, and they are just...
straight gas.
Dominating.
Yeah. Cooking. Yeah.
Dominating.
Put the one down. We're throwing absolute cheddar.
Barker's not even, like, having an ounce of it. It is... I'm as someone who does this, I enjoy the content so much, but I'm also like jealous of how good the show is because this show isn't as good. It's not as good. Anyways, let's go over to the podcast only. Subscribe and review if you want the rest of the stuff that we're going to talk about. You know, it'll be a mystery to you unless you do those things. So I promised a podcast and I did a podcast. We did 30 minutes of content. Talked about Joey Chestnut, Kobayashi, hot dog debates, Aaron Rodgers dysfunction. What else? Oh, Twitter likes. So much ground was covered. And Armin screwed it up. So, what's your Twitter? Hey, subscribe to this podcast. I'll do another one on a different day. But yeah, he comes in here. He's like, so do you want to re-record? No, I do not want to re-record. I can't do a secondary podcast. I can't just rehash the stuff I talk about. So anyways, I'm sorry to everybody listening to this. I'm sorry that Armin, you know, just can't figure out how to press a button. Maybe someday he'll learn how to just like press the button and that Hey, man, you'll get there someday. Like, someday you'll get there where you can press the button. Nah, it was a crash. The software crashed. Anyway, sorry about that. We'll see you tomorrow.